This is Comics Palooza, the only comic book podcast that is always hot to go. I'm one of your hosts, Chance.
It's a comics and nerd culture podcast, and I'm your other host, Cameron.
Hello, Cameron.
Hello.
You're sounding a little deep, a little sultry, but not
a little. It'll cut in and out. I have my water very handy because there might be a time when I just start. I feel like even as I'm talking right now, if I'm not careful, it will just sink into like croak.
I mean, croak into that mic. People love it.
I don't know.
Yes. Another one of us is sick. We just, Oklahoma's just a cesspool of diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a fever for like 12 hours and feel really bad for like 24?
Never had a fever.
The one, when I got off the plane, I felt kind of bad one day, felt really bad the next day. And then the day after that, I woke up and I had 102 fever. And I literally just slept the entire day. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I was up maybe 3 full hours tops.
See, like, for me, Wednesday, I started coughing. Like, a pretty dry cough.
Yeah, yeah.
Which that's is how not, mine started, too. But, like, I would cough, like, to where I couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday, I just woke up feeling pretty miserable. And I got ready for work. And I had a doctor's appointment unrelated to my sickness. And I was like, I just don't want to go to work. And so I went to my doctor's appointment and then just came home. Friday, I had to take a group of students to something that was like an all-day event. Like we left at 7:30 and got back about 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
Just all day. But I was loaded up on medicine so much that I was like, I feel amazing. I could do anything in the world. Mm-hmm. And that all just kind of came back to bite me in the butt on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, actually, mine was a little similar. I had a dry cough on Thanksgiving. Then the day after, like, I barely slept that night because I just couldn't, like, I'd lay there and then I'd start coughing and then I'd lay there and then I'd start coughing. And like you said, like, coughing until I couldn't breathe. And then I got loaded up on a whole bunch of medicine, went to Nikki's family Thanksgiving on zero sleep. legitimately, I was sitting on the couch with Nikki on one side of me and her grandma on the other side. And I just kept, like... and like I'd start snoring and Nikki would elbow me just because I was snoring in the living room.
It's like, please don't say anything inflammatory, anyone.
It's true. I was like, babe, I would fight with your family, but I'm tired.
She's like, good, this is easier this way.
And then I went to sleep, and then the next morning I had a fever of 102. It was church, so I guess the night I couldn't sleep was Friday night, not Thursday. That's right, because we were traveling Thanksgiving. Anyway, and then we were going to go to church that next morning. I'm going to church. I'm going to bed. And I took a shot of NyQuil, and I slept 12 hours, got up and ate barely anything, went back to bed.
Yeah. Isn't sickness so interesting?
It is. This is our How Do You Feel podcast, where we talk about illness. Send in your stories. The weirder, the better. Have you been through chemo? How did it feel?
Probably pretty bad. That's my guess. That's my guess.
This is a joke, people. I'm sure that is a podcast somewhere where people just talk about their symptoms of illnesses and stuff.
WebMD the podcast.
WebMD the podcast. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, you don't want to hear about that. It is good to have some backstory on why I might start croaking out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess. Maybe the mystery would have been better.
Just hearing Cameron's sultry tones.
It's not sultry.
Just hear that deep, deep voice.
It's real bad.
It really is. There's something like sickness can do to your voice that just life can't. You can't imitate it.
You just can't.
But we are a comic book podcast. So the way this is going to work is we have both read some comic books that came out this Wednesday. And we are going to review the ones we read for you, starting with our most in-depth review, which will be our best book. We'll take turns going through the books that we read this week. I think we only have one in common this week.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what you've read, but probably.
Yeah, it seems likely.
Yes. And then after that, we will cut to a fake commercial that doesn't exist. And then we will have a B segment where we'll discuss some nerdy topic. Yes?
There we go.
Oh, I did not realize you had a very grumpy face on.
Yeah, I had a grumpy face because you cut out.
Oh,
I was making a grumpy face at the internet.
Okay. Wait, for me, it froze on the grumpy face. Yeah. I was like, did I say something wrong?
No.
But yes, so let's kick things off. Cameron, you are the keeper of who goes first. So
you are first.
I am first. Okay. I had a hard time choosing this week. I actually texted Cameron about it yesterday. Because I feel like all of them, huh?
Life doesn't make sense. Time is fake.
Yeah. I feel like all of my books are solid, like 8 out of 10s, maybe like 89% on a test. Like they were all B pluses. And you might be, we've got this like all or nothing kind of like rating system now. Like when media gets reviewed, and I don't mean that in a bad way. All of them are great. But it was just really difficult for me to choose one.
Like if it's not a 10, it's a 3.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much how people treat it these days. There was nothing like a Bug Wars that I was just like, yes, this. But there was also nothing that I was like, man, I'm not picking up the next issue. So, I decided I would go with the number one in my stack. There's only one number one because it gives me the most to talk about. So my best book this week is going to be The Darkness Number One.
The Darkness Number One? Never even heard of that.
I recognized the this like title. It reminded me of something. I still don't know what it is. Maybe The Darkness got a game that I played. Yeah. At one point, like a video game. It was just so familiar to me. This is written by Mark Silvestri. Pencils done by Ed Benes.
Looks like, yeah, there was a video game on the 360.
Yeah.
PS3 360. And two came out in 2007. Survival horror. It looks the font is that same.
Maybe I rented it or something. I'm just not sure. I did a little investigation, and The Darkness is a character that appeared in, I believe, Witchblade, and then was popular enough that they got spun off into their own thing for a few years, and then just kind of went away. So this is a modern reimagining of The Darkness, and I very much enjoyed it. It's a thick book.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's got some girth to it. Probably not the best way to put that.
No.
But it starts out with a man and woman in what looks like kind of maybe older New York. They're doing it. they are mid-coitus, you could say. And a guy busts in. You could
say.
Huh?
You could say. But yeah. Should say? I don't know.
And the shadows are telling him not to do it. But he's telling the shadows to shut up while he enjoys his partner.
You heard it here first. The shadows say true love waits.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think the reason, because then a guy crashes in with a whole like SWAT team and he's like, we've got you. And he's like, nope, I'm making a new man. And then he melts into a skeleton and dies like on top of her.
Oh. Well,
cut to a few years later, we've got an orphanage. There's a little boy who's being bullied, but he's got one friend named Jenny.
Name is Forrest.
His name is, that's actually probably Jackie, Estacado. Jackie Estacado is the main character. And Jackie beats up the bully, but gets in a lot of trouble because the father of the orphanage, the priest father, has it out for Jackie. And didn't catch the beginning when he was getting picked on. So all he saw was Jackie wailing on the dude's face on the ground. And then he is being probably adopted. It kind of goes down more like a sale, in my opinion. But he's getting adopted by just the most obvious mafioso like you've ever seen. He's like, yes, Mr. Franchetti. It's like, oh, that guy's in the mafia.
Yeah, that's a mob name.
Cut to this guy. He's older, and he gets a call after an obvious night of rabble rousing from his adopted father, who's like, I know who it was. It was the mechanic. He's like, nah, I liked the mechanic. And cut to him with holding the mechanic by the tie over a ledge off a building, being like, why'd you do it? Why'd you betray us? Kind of some standard mob stuff. And Jackie's like, you know, Mr. Franchetti got you this tie, didn't he? And he's like, yeah, it's my favorite tie. And he's like, well, based on recent events, I think he wants it back. And he cuts it, and the guy falls to his death. Then we meet his cleaner, the guy who like cleans up his messes. And then we learned that there are some Russians in town. They're the ones who bought this guy off and made him turn against the family. And they are at Mr. Franchetti's restaurant trying to tell him they'll let him keep 35% of the town if he like merges with them, like kind of surrenders. And he's of course like, nah, man, like I'm not, so I'll kill you. And they're like, well, I guess it's war then. And they walk out of the restaurant. Turns out it is Jackie's 21st birthday. There's a cop watching Jackie. I don't really know what her deal is. I think she'll probably be important later. But as she is watching the restaurant, there's a drive-by shooting, and a big shootout happens. Jackie saves his adopted dad, gets him out of there. And then he's at a nightclub and he's talking to a bartender named Jenny. I am assuming this is the Jenny from the orphanage. I am not certain of that. I believe the Jenny from the orphanage was definitely being set up as some sort of love interest. But this Jenny seems very tired of watching Jackie pick up women in the bar. So it's kind of one of those deals. I think this is the same girl, and I think she is a love interest. But right now, she's more like annoyed friend. It's funny, he orders a Jackie special martini, and she's like, are you sure you're 21 now? And he's like, yeah, I want a Jackie special martini. And she's like, okay, here's your club soda. I guess he just doesn't drink. He's killed several people already. He's taken two girls home, but he doesn't drink. Gotta draw the line somewhere. So he leaves the bar with a girl, gets in his really nice car and drives away. And the guy from earlier, from the melting man who broke into his room right before he died, is following them. And he's got some little slime that turns into some big slime dragon. And he's like, tonight's the night. It's over for Jackie. While Jackie is trying to woo a woman, his eyes start bleeding blood. Don't know why. And this guy's like, everything changes for Jackie tonight. But we got to get to them before they do. Cut to the most evil-looking angels I've ever seen in my entire life. Let me see if I can get you a shot of these suckers.
Yeah, they don't look nice.
They're staring at Jackie's apartment. They're going to go kill him. That guy gets another SWAT team out, and they're heading up to Jackie's room. And Jackie starts throwing up black ooze. So something's wrong here.
Yeah, you don't normally do that.
Yeah. So the SWAT team breaks into his room at the same time as the angels break through his window. And they start killing each other, saying, like, one of them seems to want to, like, protect Jackie, the SWAT guys, and the angels are trying to kill him. And a dark voice is just saying, let us in, Jackie. We can help you. And it's kind of a building tension moment where the angels are overwhelming the SWAT guys, but the voice just keeps telling them to let him in. And he says, embrace the darkness. And right as he's about to get his head chopped off by a magic sword, he becomes this really awesome thing and kills him.
Oh, yeah, just kills him dead.
So then darkness forms all around him and a whole bunch of little gremlins pop up and start attacking the angels. They're having a fight with all these little gremlins and the angels and Jackie in his new pumped up form. And then finally he decides he's going to ride one of the angels out. So he grabs it by the neck and pulls it out the window, and it cushions his fall onto his own car from like 40 stories up. And then it cuts back to the room where the girl that he brought home is just staring at the ruins of the apartment she was just in. It's a very funny moment. Just like, oh, she was there. Didn't realize. The bartender finds him outside the bar, in the garbage. And he doesn't remember anything that happened after he jumped out the window. But the angel lady's there in like a regular person costume. And she's like really trying to sleep with him, but in a very like mean way. I have a hunch on this one. Because then the other guy comes in and they start fighting over whether the darkness is a good thing or a bad thing. And they kind of indicate maybe like if Jackie won't play ball with them, maybe they'll have to take it out on Jenny, which he really doesn't like. But before things can get ugly, she leaves. And he's like, I'm leaving too. But just so you know, like, your whole life has changed. Oh, don't sleep with her or anyone for that matter. And it kind of makes like the whole his dad probably melting while sleeping with somebody thing. Like,
puts it into perspective.
I'm guessing if Jackie gets intimate, he will melt and die. And that's why the angel lady was trying to get him in bed. And then he's at a safe house, I guess, of some sort. And he's like, well, apparently everyone's trying to kill me. And he gets news that the Russians hit his family and his adopted dad is in critical condition in the hospital. And he's just feeling overwhelmed. And then he looks up and he's like, all right, tell me what you guys can do. And there's just all these monsters in the darkness. And they're like, we thought you'd never ask. And that's the end of the issue.
We thought you'd never ask.
And then there's a really cool like thing. I guess the guy who wrote this was one of the original creators of the darkness. And he goes on this whole thing. I normally don't read the stuff at the end of comics. But he goes through his process of like why he redesigned things, what way, like what you should look out for on the design. I guess the whole thing is that Jackie is the darkness, which makes him like one of the greatest evils in the world, but it's given to a guy that actually has a good heart. So the whole thing is like, he's kind of an anti-hero who's haplessly falling into doing the right thing, which I can really get behind, you know, that kind of idea of like, a John sort of Constantine. Like an
anti-villain.
Yeah, kind of. But an anti-villain would do... maybe. But yeah, definitely like part hero, part part extreme. But yeah, I just... I had a lot of fun with it. It kind of read like a 90s or early 2000s hour-long drama.
Uh-huh.
Like, it very much had that kind of energy to me, like an X-Files or, I don't know if you ever watched the show Kindred, The Embrace, or nope. Even a Buffy.
Never did.
It just kind of had that energy to me, which was really appealing to me because I used to love those kinds of shows. Even a Smallville, to a degree. I feel like Smallville kind of gave them a little more camp, let the weirdness out a little bit more. But this was a little bit more like trying to take itself seriously, even though it was quippy and funny. It was just interesting. I really enjoyed my time with it. I'm definitely gonna get keep getting this and see where it goes. But yeah, that's the darkness number one.
All right.
I'll show you the cover. I don't think I did.
You did because you showed me. You showed me the inside font.
Yes, this is the guy with the SWAT team.
Mm.
The guy that was there when his dad died. I assume it's his dad. It makes the most sense. When
the math checks out,
because he's like, you shouldn't sleep with her or anyone for that matter. It'll be the last thing you do. It's like, oh, okay.
Trust me.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was different than everything that I've been reading. But like I said, it just had that energy of like a Buffy that I or an Angel that I was really just I enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, as your best issue was the beginning of something, my best issue is not quite the end of something, but Ultimate Spider-Man 23, the penultimate issue. The penultimate.
Penultimate.
Yeah, there's only one more issue, and then who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? It's a bit of a bummer because I really like this take on Spider-Man, where he's like older, like established, you know, he's like, he's always felt like there was something missing. And then he's in his late thirties and like finds out, oh, actually I was supposed to be bitten by a radioactive spider. The Maker prevented that from happening.
They're aware of the Maker's influence in the Ultimate Universe.
Some of them are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
I think in the Ultimates especially, they're more dealing with that. But Spider-Man's kind of, focused on, of course, Kingpin, who's like the Kingpin of Manhattan and like part of the Makers. There's like villains over different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kingpin's sort of like over this part of the world. So he's a little bit more focused, but it's, you know, still dealing with the Maker. Yeah, I kind of forgot because there was a big gap between this one and the last issue. Because when we left off, young Richard Parker, who's wearing the original Spider-Man suit that he got in this book, which was the black suit. And it's like Pico Tech. Like it's just a tech suit. But it does a lot of the spiders. Pico Tech, yes. It does some of the spider power, so you can do the flips and be stronger and all of that. I don't think he has like maybe a rudimentary spider sense. But it's like the suit that does it, and it's not him. But he's gone off to do something with Felicia Hardy. They're breaking into Fisk Tower to like install something, you know, a MacGuffin that's going to protect them in some way.
A doohickey.
Spider-Man parlance, we would call it a doohickey.
Is that the name they gave it in the Spider-Verse movie?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But we get 1 hour later and Mary Jane's very mad because she's like, what do you mean? My son's gone. And she's mad at Otto Octavius, who's been helping them out this whole time. Mm-hmm. He also has a spider suit, refers to himself as a superior Spider-Man, which is a fun throwback. That's kind of what he does. He's just like, I've saved us all. I made a device that's going to keep us all safe. And he went to go install it. I mean, what can I say? He's kind of he does his own thing. What do you want me to say? Sorry? I'm not going to say sorry. Peter and Mary Jane are both very upset about this. But then Octavius gives Peter another one of the devices and is like, well, you can go save him. You can go make sure he's all right. So he's like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. We're not done talking about this. Mary Jane's still very mad. And so they leave and he's just like, was I not clear that I was going to save us all? He's just like, I don't get why you're upset. And then it cuts. And then May Parker, who is Peter's daughter, is just sitting on the table. And she's like, you should be better than you are. Just like piling it on a little bit more. Then we cut to Richard and Felicia as they're breaking into Fisk Tower. They kind of have a little cute will they, won't they thing going on.
That was kind of weird also because she's his dad's love interest.
But, you know, she's his age in this universe. But they're like breaking in, kind of talking. And he's just like, you're awesome. And she's just like, you're a rookie. And then they're like, okay, here we go. This is where we got to do it. And, you know, there's a bunch of lasers that we see that we're going to have to get to. Because there's always lasers that are visible. Then we cut back to the tower. And J. Jonah Jameson and also Ben Parker, they're like newspaper men, in this universe, Ben Parker is still alive, and he was like the editor of the Daily Planet.
Nope,
not the Daily Planet, the Daily Bugle.
There you go.
Why? What's the deal with comic book characters working for newspapers? That's old media.
Can you imagine that comic book character is an influencer newscaster?
Yeah, I gotta get to my YouTube channel. But they've basically prepared a report that's exposing Kingpin and everything that he's been up to, and then Octavius is going to hack them into the mainframe essentially, and it will just broadcast it to every screen that there is. And so it's just like exposing him. And he's like, we've only got a little bit of time. We can probably do it like 3 times, about 30 seconds each. So just make sure that you are succinct and you get everything across. Mole Man is there for some reason. Not important. Probably.
Probably.
But then we see they're starting to make their report, and it's on all the Times Square things as Spider-Man is flipping through the city.
Twitting.
Web swinging, slinging his way across the city.
Oh, I was just making the noise, thwip.
Oh, thwip. I thought you said flipping.
Thwip.
Thwip, thwip, thwip. And then the Negative Man comes in. We get a, like, in Wilson Fisk's office, Negative Man comes in. And it seems like he's about to challenge Kingpin.
Is it Henry Lee?
Is he what?
Is it Henry Lee?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea. Probably. Maybe. This is what he looks like.
It could be Henry Lee.
Could be. It's been a while. But they are, vying for each other's position. At the same time, in comes Mysterio, who is Gwen Stacy. She was part of, like, it's a group of 5 people that were Mysterio and shared the powers of Mysterio. They got blown up and fused into one being.
So they are all Gwen Stacy?
They're all Gwen Stacy and also all the other people. But she and Harry Osborn are, like, coming into the tower. And like, we're ready for a fight, and there's an army of bullseyes, because of course there's an army of bullseyes. But suddenly they all stand aside, and they're like, come on in. And they're like, well, this is somehow worse than if we just had to fight our way through. But they're going in. Kingpin and Negative Man are about to throw down when what should happen. But Ben Parker trips one of the lasers.
Of course.
That they are going. So they start getting attacked by giant robot arms. And then suddenly in busts Spider-Man into Kingpin's office through the window. And he's like, where's my son? Or he doesn't say, where's my son? But he's just like trying to, figure out where his son is.
Throwing his weight around.
But they're going to be doing some fighting. Negative Man is like, I'll go take care of this, because they see the infiltration happening. So he goes to take care of that. And Kingpin and Spider-Man decide to throw down. It doesn't go well. towards the end of the first year, Harry and Peter go and attack Kingpin also. And it goes really badly for them. And they lose pretty bad. It's like their first big defeat. And so this is sort of like round two. And it starts going poorly. Then we just see more of Ben Parker and Felicia Hardy fighting the robot arms. And they're just like this crazy, like they're like coming apart and reconstituting and doing all kinds of stuff. Interesting. Spider-Man and Kingpin are still fighting. And Kingpin's like, didn't you learn last time? Like, I totally destroyed you last time. What are you even doing? He's like, well, that back then that was at the beginning, and now I know what I'm doing. And he, punches Kingpin really good. And then it just kind of ends with a sort of a classic Spider-Man moment. I forgot Captain Britain's there, but he's bad. He's the one who was going to talk to Green Goblin and Mysterio. And basically be like, this could all be yours. I know you guys have plans. You might be interested in running things, Mysterio. Peter calls for Green Goblin to come help him. He's like, we're in this together. Green Goblin like hangs up on him and is like, no, I'm not going to come help you. I'm in this moment. I'm making my choice. Peter gets beat pretty bad. Again, gets beat down by the Kingpin. But then we just have that Spider-Man moment, as made famous by the Spider-Verse movies, of just like, I'm Spider-Man, I get back up again. And no matter how many times I get knocked down. So he just like, he gets up and he's like, I'm just getting started. And then that's the end. Before our ultimate issue. I think the thing that I appreciated about this is I feel like Ultimate Spider-Man has been spinning its wheels for the past several issues. I think it's just been limited by being part of whatever this story is that they're telling, with the Maker and all of that that's coming to an end, where it's like, if it was just able to like spread its wings and do its own thing, it would be amazing.
Yeah.
If it was more of this, like things really coming to a head, the pieces all coming together, and it did that much quicker. Like, I think the book would just be perfect from start to finish. Unfortunately, you have like the back quarter is just not as strong, but this is like moving to something good. So right, I'm sure wouldn't just call it out for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my problem. When we started, the Ultimate Universe was pretty new and Absolute was just starting. And both of them seemed to have a shelf life because they both had like this impotence. And once this impetus was gone, it seemed like they would be gone. That seems to be true for
Ultimate Universe.
The Ultimate Universe. But the Absolute Universe seems to be ramping up its production. So
it is interesting that we haven't seen any new Absolute lines started, really.
Yeah, but I read the solicits for February. I just happened to see them and was reading them. And it's like, I think they're introducing like Absolute Hawkman in one of the
books. Already introduced him in the Absolute Evil.
Well, but I think he's like getting like a storyline or something.
Okay. Yeah, he was like introduced. He's a bad guy.
Oh, is he?
Uh-huh.
That's a bummer. I love Hawkman.
Also, Ultimate Green Arrow is dead.
Oh, Absolute Killed. Green Arrow.
Yes, okay. Not Ultimate, Absolute.
It's just a shame when the original run went for like 12 years, something like that.
Of Ultimate?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember reading a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it.
I've got the app now, and I've saved Ultimate Spider-Man to my like library because I want to read it. But anyway, so I have 6 and you have 4, right?
Yeah. Well, I have 3 left.
Oh, you have, I guess I have, yeah. But I really have 5 because you're going to do one of mine. Mm-hmm. So I think we can just do me, you, right?
Something like that. However long it takes us.
Yeah. I will keep the spider train going with the book that I was going to make my best book if I didn't do that one. All new Spider Book Gwen Ghost Spider number 5. The end of the first arc, really loved it. this is by Stephanie Phillips with Paolo Villani as the artist. This arc is all about Gwen facing her anger with her situation. Really, it's about teen angst, if you want to get right down to it. She apparently was depowered for a while and had a symbiote that was giving her spider powers. In this one, she's dealing with that symbiote when it's not on her and it's addicted to anger because she was always angry when they were bonded together. So this deals with that and deals with her confronting her problems instead of moping about them. And that's ultimately what saves the day with Miles, Silk, and Agent Anti-Venom. And I loved it. I thought it was a really, really strong start. I'm excited to see where this continues to go. They get a girl band together at the end of the issue. And
should.
You got to love a spider girl band.
I do. All right. Well, I will also keep the spider train rolling. I don't know why I picked this book up. I just know that I did. And I thought it was all right. I'll probably read the next one.
Don't leave me in suspense.
It was The End, 2099.
I wanted to read it. I want to go back and read the 2099 stuff that's preceding it.
Yeah, I haven't really read any 2099 stuff. But I just saw the cover and I was like, oh, look, Cyclops is on there. That's pretty fun. unexpected. And yeah, it is a bit unexpected. Let me just read the description from the beginning of the book. Exiled and left for dead in the darkness of space after a failed attempt at conquering the galaxy. Do you want to guess who?
Doom 2099?
Oh, Dracula.
Oh.
Dracula has been found by an even greater evil than himself. Now reforged and fashioned into a harbinger of doom for one whose hunger for destruction and chaos knows no bounds. Dracula heralds the end, 2099.
Wait, is Dracula a herald of Galactus? Because if he is, I love it.
But like even more than Galactus, it's called Abyssus.
Abyssus?
And it's like Galactus with a symbiote? I forget exactly who.
Doesn't matter. I love it.
And then Mephisto is on the other side. Trying to defend Earth because Abyssus is like devouring planets, but also devouring the souls of everyone on the planets. And Mephisto's like, well, I can't have that. So he like summons the warriors of 2099. And the Abyssus is like, I can summon the warriors from all the times that I've like touched with like my corruption. And so we just have this big showdown between Mephisto and Abyssus and all their chosen warriors.
Oh, is it just action figures clashing together the book?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I thought it was going to be about the world of 2099.
No. And then it ends where we meet Spider-Man of
3099. Oh.
Who is the guy in the gold.
Oh, fun.
He's not a nice guy, from what I can tell.
That actually reminds me. I know people have been all about, at least the internet that I've seen, has been all about Venom 252. Apparently Spider-Man 252 was the first appearance of the black suit. So this issue, Mary Jane Venom makes Venom recolor itself and they decide to pretend to be Spider-Man. So you've got like a Venom Spider-Man, which, you know, he got the black suit in, Spider-Man 252. So getting a Spider-Man suit for Venom in 252. And then there's a backup that introduces Eddie Parker, who has a symbiote named Pete. And that's like his power is he has, and Eddie is kind of a punk who doesn't care about anyone. But the symbiote Pete is a hero who wants to save the world. So the symbiote's like influencing him. And I know like everyone's been talking about it. They're saying like, get this issue while you can. Because it's going to be a hot commodity someday. I feel like by saying that, it's already not going to be.
Now is the only time it will be a hot commodity.
but that being said, I do intend to pick it up just because it does seem like such a big deal of an issue.
It seems very fun.
A lot of like online content creators are like, make sure you get this one. Yeah, and people they're saying the Eddie Brock or the Eddie Parker backup is incredible, and everyone's hoping it'll continue.
Just seems fun.
But yeah, so just that's a little aside. It's a thing I know that's going on in the comic book news space. But we weren't prepared for it, so
we rarely are.
My next book is Supergirl number 8. I will remember that it is only by one person again this time. But of course, DC hides its title page every time. Sophie Campbell. This continues to be great. Just the Silver Age tone, dealing with weird parts of Kara's history. We deal with a lot of weird parts about Kara's history in this one. But that's a lot of fun.
Good. Is that it?
Yeah. It's a book blurb.
It is a book blurb. This blurb will be blurbier. Children of the Round Table number 4. It was almost my best book just because it continues to be so fun.
And it's an exposition issue.
What?
But it's an exposition issue.
It is an exposition issue. I still think that Dee Nucuolo's art, I just continue to be really wowed by it. I just had a lot of fun. I think it's fun that the armor that they're fighting against looks like... from Full Metal Alchemist.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And there's just a twist at the end that I wasn't expecting.
My wife called it like three pages before. I'm reading this with my wife and son, and they're both enjoying it. But my wife's like, imagine it's in the possession of, and she said who it is. Then it happened. I was like, babe, how did you know that? And she's like, I don't know. I just thought it'd be funny.
Well, I was just like...
Don't spoil it.
Feels a little too true to life.
It does feel a little
too. And I did just like the grandma being like, they're like, why do you have this big axe? And she's like, to let fascists know they're not welcome in my home.
Yep. Which was pretty great.
Yeah, grandma.
Is that your last one or do you have one more?
I have one more.
Okay. I'll do one more and then I'll do my last two. The other book that I was really thinking about making my best book, it was kind of between the Darkness Ghost Spider and this Infernal Hulk number 2. I'm just a really big fan of Lovecraftian stuff, and this is like, what if a Lovecraftian horror possessed the Hulk's body? He wakes up an elder abomination that sleeps beneath Atlantis, and it destroys Atlantis. But then he has to like subdue it, but not he's not subduing it to stop it. He's subduing it to like dominate it. And Namor's like, thanks. Everyone said you were becoming a monster. And he's like, oh no, I'm gonna send him back to kill you. I just needed to beat him so he knew who was in charge.
Oh no, I am.
So he's like, I would kill you myself, but like he gets to. So I continue to love where this is going. I'm loving the like Lovecraftian horror element. Yeah, terrific.
All right, and my last book is Absolute Batman number 15.
Ooh.
The thing that I didn't know going into this, I mean, Scott Snyder writes it, but Jock is actually doing the art on this issue, and it was just nice to see them be reunited. Scott Snyder and Jock is just a match made in heaven. I thought it was really interesting, just like revelation of who the Joker is in the Absolute Universe. Feels very complex, sort of complicated, and a bit of a reversal where it seems like he lives in the mansion in Gotham and has the secret tunnels underneath and all of the connections and all the money and everything. So he feels like the Bruce Wayne. Well, Bruce is like the outsider.
Okay.
In a lot of ways. Which I don't know if I'm like, ooh, I really like that. But, you know, everything's got a rhyme, right? And so that's what it's doing. It's rhyming nicely. And the art is really, just really gorgeous. Disgusting at times. Which just feels kind of par for the course. But I'm very excited because at the very end, it says, next, Absolute Wonder Woman. And so we have our crossover coming next.
The first crossover.
Which I'm excited about because it's two really good books coming together.
Very nice. My next is Action Comics 1093. This continues to be the best argument for why Superman is the best superhero. This is by Mark Waid with artist Skylar Patridge. This is a really small story. And you could be tempted to think it would be boring. But this is just the story of what does Superman do? I guess what does Superboy do when something unfair is going on and you have the power to stop it, but it's not the right thing to do? And this book forces Clark and Jonathan Kent both to answer some really tough questions to decide what the right thing to do is.
Like saving your dad from a tornado.
Yes, that is. But like...
That's a toughie.
In this one, the bank is foreclosing on all of the farms in Smallville. And it's saying like now that it's under new management, they're realizing that people weren't making their payments. And like in all technicality, he's right. It's also like not fair, and they had like prior arrangements that the bank isn't honoring and stuff, and like that's the whole thing. And Clark's like, well, I can just beat him up, and they're like, no. And then he goes to an old gold mine and just digs out a ton of gold, and they're like, no, like that's not how we solve this. So it's just really it continues to be a great series. I'm glad that after that first arc, we're still doing this Superboy
stuff.
Oh, and then you don't have another one.
Nope.
I was kind of vamping until you got your other one.
Just vamping until you get your other one.
My last one is Nova Centurion number 2 by Jed McKay with art by Alvaro Lopez and Matteo Della Fonte. I know I've said this about all mine, but great issue. We get the history of Nova with this character Ravenous, which apparently happened in like 2007's Annihilation. And Nova realizes he doesn't really know anything about this guy. So he tries to take him out. But he's like, we only met one time. You don't know anything about me. And he starts like draining the energy out of Nova. So it was really exciting kind of getting to learn the history of this, like through this new book. Yeah. Like I said, 8 out of 10.
Nice.
So I really enjoyed all my books this week. I can't complain about a single one.
Good. All right. There it was. We've done all of our books. It was much shorter than last time to get to this point.
Well, sort of. We did 4 weeks at once.
Yes. That can't be helped. It probably could have been helped.
Well, it could have been.
But should it have been?
It would have been difficult.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break. Wink, wink. And we'll be right back. And hello, we're back.
Oh, that product saved my life.
Mm. I feel so much more rested after that break.
It's true. Are you doing okay?
Yeah, I've recovered fully and completely.
All right. You seem a little exhausted.
I'm always exhausted. One time I was listening to a podcast, or it was a video game podcast, and they literally did. They're like, we're going to take a break. And they're like, we actually did take like a 3-day break. Like, didn't mean to, but we did. Oops.
I mean, should we?
No.
Hi, everybody.
We're going to keep going.
Okay. All right. I think you have the topic this week.
I do. Because last year we did this at about this time. Because it's been a year, you know.
I was much more prepared last year.
You were much more prepared. You were less in a pit of despair. Mm-hmm. Last year, but, you know, we're at the end of a year. Some of us have done a lot of reading. Some of us have done less reading.
I've done like almost no reading.
Almost zero reading, which is unfathomable to me.
Well, I've read a lot.
Yes, but not like, books.
Yeah, not novels.
Of course, you're going to go over some of the best things we've read or current events, news sources, potentially. A chance. He joked about that. I don't know if he was really going to do that.
I mean, I'm going to go over what I've read.
He's going to go over what he's read. So I just picked five. I did a top five. Are you going to do? Did you do a top five?
In no particular order. Yes.
Okay. Mine aren't in super particular order either. So yeah. How about you go first, Chance?
Okay. Well, the one like regular. Book that I read this year was All Systems Red by Martha Wells, the first book in the Murderbot Diaries. And I loved it. I think it is very clever. For those of you who don't know, Murderbot is a completely sentient and autonomous robot who doesn't want people to know that he's fully sentient and autonomous. So he follows all of his original programming and directives.
Same.
Well, and it is kind of it's a commentary on a lot of things, obviously. But it's also very funny. All he wants to do is get back to his pod, and he's hacked it so he can access the entire history of television, from all of human history. There's like space travel and stuff, so it's like way in the future. And he just wants to get back to his pod and watch TV. That's all he wants. And like he's like, what they don't know is I'm a murder bot. I could go rogue at any moment. But then he goes and does his job. It's just very funny. We got a delightful cast of characters. Murderbot himself is the kind of who we're kind of following his internal monologue the whole time. It's just really interesting and fun.
Nice. All right. Well, I think I'm going in order from least to greatest.
Oh, okay.
Potentially. These are all books that I probably have talked about on this show already. So it's just revisiting. But for me, number five is The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman. Did you know I read that? Does that sound familiar?
I believe so.
Who knows if I talked about it on here. But no, I've not watched the movie. There's a Netflix movie of this book, but I've not watched it. But essentially, it is a group of retirees in Britain that they live in like a retirement community. And for fun, they like look at cold cases and try to solve them. Mm-hmm. Just for a thing to do to keep the mind sharp. And then somebody ends up murdered in their community that they live in. And so they take it upon themselves with the help of some police detectives to solve the murder. I feel like it's very charming. You have a nice cast of characters. It's a fun sort of semi-cozy mystery. But I just love the cast of characters, and they're like, just lots of like old people aren't good with technology kind of jokes that I just found kind of delightful.
Love it. All right. My number two or number four, depending on how you're counting, is a book my wife and I listened to on a long road trip. Agatha Christie's Murder on the Lynx.
Oh. L-I-N-K-S?
What?
L-I-N-K-S, Lynx?
Yes. I don't even know. It's an Agatha Christie book. If you've read one, you know what it is.
You do.
You've got, Murder on the Orient Express is the classic one. They also made a movie out of Murder on the Nile.
Death on the Nile.
Death on the Nile, yep. This was the second Poirot book ever written. She's real good at it right away. It's interesting. I think what Agatha Christie probably does better than the mystery, because the mystery is kind of, I would say the mystery in most of these is kind of whatever. The twists are probably more famous than the actual cases. But I would say probably the thing that Agatha Christie does better than anything is really make the setting pop. She does a great job of like Murder on the Orient Express is on a train in winter. And the train in winter is really kind of part of the story. Same with the Nile, and the party boat they're on in the Nile. And this one just takes place on an estate in France. In kind of like, I don't know, it just feels very like Tudors or, Bridgerton. I know that's English, but it's just like, oh, there's a little town nearby where everyone knows each other, and then this rich family up at their estate, and they take the horses down to the blacksmith to get it reshoed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just very, like, it feels like I would want to live in this town if there wasn't a murderer in.
Yeah, the murderer kind of is a, a bit of a downer.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that.
That's Murder on the Lynx by Agatha Christie.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep us in the theme of murder. This one is not a mystery book. It is a book, as a young adult book that I read for one of my book clubs at school. And it is called Scythe by Neil Schusterman.
I've read Scythe.
Did you enjoy it?
I didn't.
You didn't? I really liked it.
I liked the concept. I thought that they were really bad at writing action.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't like a ton of action in the first place.
Like, not just like action scenes, like actions.
Like things happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of philosophizing.
Yeah. Like, the concept I liked.
Because in the concept, imagine a world where there's no more sickness. We figured out how to stop death from happening. And there's an AI that kind of rules over everything, sort of tells everyone what they can do, helps people out, whatever they need. But something deep inside of us realizes that maybe people should die. Maybe death should still exist. And in comes the scythedom. Basically a group of people with a license to kill. That's just what they do. That's their job. They just select people seemingly at random and kill them. And they just are able to do that. And the book kind of centers on two characters who become apprentice scythes. And kind of get swept up into a lot of like politics of like, what is the role of a scythe? How should they go about doing their job? And they're sort of like, essentially it becomes like, in the end, originally, one of them would become a scythe and the other one would just be a normal person. And then it becomes one of you will become a scythe and instantly have to kill the other person and they're just dead. And so it's just, there's sort of this like thing hanging over their heads. Maybe a very, very light romance potential. Not a lot happens in that department. No, but I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun read. I need to read the rest of the series still. But I liked Scythe.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I when the second one came out, because I read it, I think right before the second one came out. I think so. Was it like 2012?
I don't remember.
That feels right. And when the second one came out, I'm like, nah, I'm okay. but it's a trilogy. All right. For me, as Cameron kind of alluded to a little bit, I have been, I found it very difficult to focus this year on much other than like comics. And I don't even know if I would be focused on comics if we didn't have this podcast, just because of my focusing issues. Even video games, I've had a hard time.
Glad we could help you with something.
Just so much is going on in the world. I feel like it's screaming for my attention. But one of the books I did read that's kind of related, and I will explain how it is helpful, is The Bible Says So, What We Get Right and Wrong About Scripture's Most Controversial Issues by Dan McClellan. I recommend this book to just about anyone.
Dan McClellan?
Yeah. Yeah. Dan's a good scholar.
He's like a good guy.
And he just writes a book about like all these controversial issues and how they're like skewed by like specifically if you're in another country, American evangelical society. That's kind of the way it's written, how those are skewed and what the Bible really says about those things. His whole thing is data, not dogma, and like what the data tell us. I think Dan does a good job of being pretty objective and telling what the like academic consensus is. I know a lot of people really struggle with Dan because they struggle with the difference between like faith and knowledge. And I think I did for a long time too. I'm not like putting myself so far above. I think a lot of people are like, oh, he's trying to lead people astray. It's like, no, he's trying to tell you like what's in the book. Dan famously doesn't get into his personal beliefs, only his academic studies. And that's very much his book. He does say things like, I just forgot the word. Infallibility of the scriptures is silly. He talks about how the Bible does not address modern sexuality in any way, shape, and or form. So using the Bible as a blunt instrument against the LGBTQ+ community is foolish. And he just deals with a lot of the issues that you would want someone saying they're dealing with the most controversial issues to get into. It's not an edgelord book. I always feel the need to clarify that. I find a lot of people just want to make like really incendiary claims like, why would you follow a book of fairy tales? Or, you know, Jesus didn't even exist. That's a different kind of dogma that the book doesn't really get into. It's not for, you know, if you've got an edgelord take, that's not what it's for. but if you want to have a level-headed discussion about what is actually in the book called the Bible, it's a great place to start.
Nice. Nice, nice, nice. I'm not discussing anything so enlightening, I suppose.
My next one's even worse, though.
Oh, no. my next book is, I definitely talked about it on here, The Tainted Cup by, I'm blanking on who wrote that.
I've got it. Well, my phone won't unlock.
Robert Jackson Bennett. And I actually, this is sort of a twofer because it's the two books of this series that exist already. So The Tainted Cup and A Drop of Corruption are both just like very excellent reads. Continuing with most of our theme of like mystery type stuff, because these are both fantasy mysteries. which is like a really good duo of investigators. Where you have Anna, who's this woman who's like so brilliant and so like so genius and like able to identify patterns and understand things that she has to like most of the time just wear a blindfold because she cannot. She'll just be overwhelmed by the world. And then her partner Din, who is modified in such a way that he can't forget anything. Like he just remembers everything. And so he does a lot of the like investigating, like being in the world, questioning, observing. And then she takes all that information and processes it, to help come up with the solution. Which I just think is a really cool team. And I feel like both of the books, like the core mystery is really strong, but then just the world that it all takes place in is very like interesting and you want to know more about it as well. And I just enjoyed my time with both of those books. So The Tainted Cup, which is what I'm listing here, but then also A Drop of Corruption.
A Drop of Corruption
is great. You should read them in that order. They're not like, I just feel like, you know, it's not like the story, they're self-contained, but in terms of character progression and, you know, characterization and all of that, it helps to read them in order.
Perfect. Okay. My next one is also kind of a twofer. That was not planned. One book I read last year.
Cheater.
But I've reread it this year.
And oh, okay.
I've reread it this year and have referenced the other one. I don't think I will probably ever read the other one. And I'll get into why here in a second. I'm trying to find the name of the second one. There it is. Okay. So the main book that I would recommend to people who are even just kind of interested in the field of biblical studies is a book called Christmaker, A Life of John the Baptist. I know I'm throwing a lot of like Christian-y stuff out at you, but I really like biblical scholarship. people don't really understand how weird of a figure John the Baptist is. he's this incredibly complicated figure that all four gospels have like an extreme need to address who he was, even though we know almost nothing about him. Yet all four gospels not only need to address who he was and where he was, but also like how Jesus was connected to him in different ways. And none of the four gospels do that in the same way. He is very like, what's the word? Unstable in the text of the Bible itself. So he's become especially in the past few years, he's become a bit of an obsession of mine. And Christmaker is by James McGrath. It kind of addresses some of the weirdness and some of the things that we do and don't know about John the Baptist. And also kind of talks about like who he is popularly in like Christianity, like but different forms of Christianity too, like Eastern Orthodox and even like the Ethiopian Tewahedo Church. He like addresses those things, and he even addresses a sect of Jews that still exist to this day, and I believe they are Arabic Jews, or they may be a mixed population of Jews that exist today that believe the Messiah was John the Baptist.
Interesting.
And they have existed for 2,000 years in one form or another. I really like this book, and I think it's a great place to really dig into some biblical scholarship, if that's something you are interested in at all. Again, we're not talking about edgelord stuff, like John the Baptist was a murderer. But we're also not talking about like, and everything that the Bible says is true, and this is how it all works, even though it seems like it doesn't make sense from the outside. We're not doing either of those things. We're just kind of addressing the scholarship. I actually was a little disappointed with Christmaker the first time I read it, because it doesn't get a lot into like theory or approach the question as to why. But he came out with a companion volume. Christmaker was always supposed to be kind of the more popular, he's got a point that he's trying to make books about how you don't get Jesus, the literary character slash political, historical political movement figure without John the Baptist is kind of what the whole thing's about. But he came out with a more academic book about 6 months later, which was in this year, and I just got it 3-4 months ago, maybe, called John of History, Baptist of Faith, Quest for the Historic Baptizer, that does get into a lot more of that academic why, how, where that I had been looking for. Though it is a much thicker, it's a textbook. It's a textbook. It's expensive. It's big. It uses a lot of big words. it doesn't. Christmaker reads very well and is a great introduction. And then I have referenced the John of History, but I haven't like read it cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'd be like reading a textbook.
Something a crazy person does.
Uh-huh. So yeah, if you have any interest in that, if you're like, John the Baptist isn't weird, what are you talking about? Just give it a sec. When you really think about John the Baptist for even a minute, it starts getting real weird.
Weird.
But yes, those are my, that's my book, almost second book by James McGrath.
All right. My next one, number two on the list, is one I actually talked about last week. And it's sort of a threefer at this point. Because I've almost finished the third one. But it's Dungeon Crawler Carl by Matt Dinneman. If you want to hear me talk about it a lot, you can go listen to last week's episode where I talked about it a lot more. It continues to be really good. I read the first, second, and I'm like 80% through with the third book. And they start to get longer. So it doesn't speak to the quality that I'm not quite done with it at the same pace. There's just more book there. But it's just, it continues to just be a lot of fun. The cast of characters, I just really enjoy. Like, you have Carl and Princess Donut from the beginning, but then sort of they have like their tutorial guide, Mordecai, who becomes more of an interesting character. You have kind of this cast of aliens that are existing outside of the game that you get to know. And then as he meets other crawlers in the dungeon and like teams up with them or as like rivals against them. It just gets really interesting, but it's just fun. It's a fun like lit RPG. So there's like lots of stats and numbers and things, but in a way that's really pleasant. And it's just genuinely very funny of a book to spend your time reading. And so I would recommend doing that, and it won't make you smarter. And it won't help you understand history, probably. I don't know. There's more books I haven't read yet. But it will help you have a good time.
Love it. Did you say that was your last one?
No.
Okay. I was like, that's not your last one. It shouldn't be. While looking for the title of my next one, I learned that there is a new Arcane Ascension book that I didn't know was out.
Which one? The Chronomancy one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I already read that one.
You already read it? When did it come out?
This year. Maybe end of last year.
Okay.
A Brief History of Chronomancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just didn't know.
I think there's only one more left.
I think I'm too behind. I don't think I read the Fool's one.
Did you read the one where he fought his dad?
Yes. I may have only read that part, because one book ends with him about to fight his dad.
I mean, the next book doesn't pick up. They don't fight immediately. But it's like he's preparing for it a lot.
Does he fight? I feel like the last thing I read was him actually fighting his dad.
Oh, okay. I liked that fight.
Yeah.
It left me grinning from ear to ear.
My last book, and it may be cheating. It may not be. I honestly don't know. Because I think I read it this year. It could have been late last year. But I was going through a big cyberpunk love, either a beginning of this year or late last year. So if I brought this book last year, I apologize. But the last book I like remember intentionally, like full length book, I intentionally sat down to read was Altered Carbon by Richard K. Morgan. Have we spoken of this?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's been a while now, so I don't remember like beat for beat anymore. But it's great. It's a guy who his whole deal is that his brain is in a computer, and they upload him to new bodies when he's needed, sleeves, and basically because of this, he's like massively in debt because he's been like uploaded so many times. So he has to work as like a bad cop to constantly be paying off those debts. It's definitely got that that cyberpunk grunge to it. I think the first season on Netflix does a pretty good job with it. They definitely, as did Game of Thrones. Granted, I've only read the first Game of Thrones book and seen like the first two episodes ever. But Game of Thrones definitely indulged subtext as text when I was watching it, especially with like sex and stuff like that. And I didn't enjoy that a lot. Just not a fan of incest as like a concept.
that series really likes it.
Yeah.
I'd say it's pro.
I don't know. It generally ends very badly.
It ends badly for everyone.
excuse me. And I feel like Netflix did a very similar thing with Altered Carbon, where like we know that in his optical, because it's like an optical like AR eyes. We know that he's like constantly getting like pop-up ads, but this one is like, but in Netflix it like lingers on like XXX ads or freshly 18 girls ads and stuff like that, in a way that I am much less a prude now than I've ever been in my life. But I still just didn't like do it once, sure. Like to make your point. But I just didn't need it all the time. I used to be like a no nudity ever guy. Now I'm like, if it enhances the story, do it. And I get the commodification of sex that cyberpunk likes to go for. I get that. But also I think like once you've made your point, stop lingering. it's just fan service at a certain lingering point. Anyway, that's off topic. I think they do a pretty good job. They make it seem a much more action series than it is. It's very noir. At its heart, it is a detective story set in this corporate dystopia, where a guy has to get used to a new body while he solves a murder that shouldn't have been possible.
Ooh, a lot of murder.
A lot of murder. I really liked Altered Carbon. If you are, I'm kind of in a cyberpunk kick right now as well. I was telling Cameron though, I don't want books that take place in a cyberpunk universe and use cyberpunk to be like, see, isn't capitalism bad? I don't want that. I want like, we already know capitalism is bad. Let's shoot a CEO in the face. So I've been looking for that lately.
Let's just take that idea to its natural conclusion.
Yeah. I want like a book about revolution, is what I've been looking for.
Sort of a Luigi Mangione type.
Sure. But if you're looking for kind of like hard-boiled detective, gritty, that also has something to say about like people becoming tools and commodities, like, there's a point that the book kind of makes, I would say, not like super bluntly, but I think it's done really well, against like biometrics, like unlocking your phone with your finger or your face, even because it's already talking about like we're making our bodies tools, not like human.
Mm-hmm. Like our bodies.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's good. It makes you think. But it's also gritty, sex-filled, mystery-solving gunslinger.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
All right. And so my last book is not that. It's not a mystery. It's not any of those things. It is a book. It is fiction. But when I read it, it made me feel smart. It's very similar sounding to the Bible because it is Babel by R.F. Kuang.
Nikki just finished that. Usually I talk about it.
We should talk about it. I need to talk to her anyway about something separate from Babel, but we can also talk about Babel. But I still feel like I'm months out from reading this book, and I still just feel very like enraptured by it. So it is a story of a boy named Robin who he's from Canton, China, and he's adopted by this Englishman when a disease like ravages his community, and he's like quote unquote rescued by this man and brought and taught to speak English and Latin and Greek. And he's sent off to the translation school in Oxford as he is old enough to do so. Because in this world, Oxford, the university, but he is there because in this world, translation is a type of magic. And by using silver, the metal silver, and sort of their fact that their hands are in all the pots of the world, the British Empire has been able to like expand in this major way because they're able to do magic because of language and the metal silver. And so Robin is learning how to do this, but it's really a story that's less about the magic. It's not like a big fantasy story. It's a story about colonialism, story about power, language, translation, the parts of ourselves that, not so much myself as a white man, I don't really give away parts of myself too much, but that especially the parts of minorities that we expect them to give away, in order to be assimilated. Mm-hmm. And I just think putting all of that in this, like, you are powerful because you can do the magic and you can make these things happen in a way. And you have all of these comforts and all these things that, you wouldn't have otherwise. So it's like, why wouldn't you want to serve this empire that's giving you so much? And just realizing the cracks that exist within that framework, that it's just an interesting story that it's telling, and interesting and powerful things that it's saying. And it's a book that will make you feel really smart. It's a book that I think will make you feel very angry. I think that's the point. And it's just really just phenomenal. All the way through. It's very long, and very, it seems very Oxford, just all the things that it talks about where it's like, I don't know what Michaelmas term is. We don't have that here. But apparently that their terms have different names, over there. And one of them is named Michaelmas.
But it's the book that's single-handedly popularizing the dark academia aesthetic.
Yeah. I mean, it feels very different from like, I'm reading another book by R.F. Kuang called Katabasis, which is also dark academia. But it's about Cambridge.
I've had the Poppy Ward trilogy for a long time. I've just not read it yet.
I've heard that it's very good.
Yeah. I've heard it's very sad though.
Well, you know, life is sad.
I've not read it long yet.
So that is my books and your books. Chance read 5 books this year.
Yeah, I probably read a couple more, but I just couldn't think of them. I read a couple philosophy books in the summer.
Top 5 almost by default.
Mm-hmm.
Some honorable mentions. I did read all of the Harry Dresden books, Dresden Files. Those are great.
I read the first, fourth, fifth, and sixth Dresden File, I think. I did read
those. Those are just good. I also read the entire manga of Delicious in Dungeon. And had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, I read like, if we're counting that stuff like that, I've read so much.
You read a lot of manga. I would count it.
Yeah, I read Kagurabachi, which was good. I read the next several volumes of Solo Leveling. I read...
Apparently there's a video game out now. I think it's on Steam.
Oh, is it? I'll have to look into it. Can't be good. Can't imagine. There's really only one person in the entire Solo Leveling world that matters.
The Solo Leveler.
Yeah, Sung Jin Woo.
And he's called Solo Leveling.
Yeah.
it really doesn't lend itself to, like, you know, a party.
No, it really doesn't. But yes, I've read many things like that. I've read a ton more Ninja Turtles. I reread The Last Ronin on the plane. Super good.
Nice.
I just read an event that Marvel had in 2017. Forgetting what the event is called, but the whole point of it was to introduce a character named Weapon H, who is this soldier. It wasn't supposed to be a soldier, but through shenanigans it ended up being. That is a clone of the Hulk. He's a clone of the Hulk with Sabretooth's senses and Wolverine's adamantium skeleton and claws. And the whole story is about Wolverine, Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, Amadeus Cho, the Hulk, and one more person that I'm just forgetting. Domino, for some reason. Trying to stop this new version of Weapon X. Long story short, things don't go Weapon X's way. They gave him too good of a healing factor, so the parts of their brain that they tried to destroy to keep him compliant didn't stay destroyed. He healed, and he decided that he was his own thing called Weapon H.
Why does Weapon X never just think, like, maybe we just should stop? It's like the Jurassic Park movies. It's like, at a certain point, someone should just say, no, no more.
It's actually really interesting how they do Weapon X in this, because it's basically an anti-mutant cult called, like, For the Love of Humanity or something like that, and they just have churches, and then the really devout people get deeper and deeper in, and then eventually, when they're so fanatically anti-mutant, Stryker, Reverend Stryker, the leader of Weapon X, gives them to the scientists and is like, turn them into something that can kill mutants.
You know, just whatever.
So the religious aspect of it, because, like, most of it is them trying to track down where the new Weapon X is, and, like, Wolverine, Sabretooth are, like, following the like science route, and the Hulk, Deathstrike, and Domino are following, like, the religious route to try to find it. So you get to see kind of both. It's really it was a good comic.
And then they fight.
It's several comics taking place over, I think, four books that were coming out in 2017.
Nice.
But it was fun.
All right. Well, that is the end of all of this. Mm-hmm. We've done it. Nearly completed another episode. Do you have books that you've read this year, dear listener, that you would like to tell us about? You can reach out to us at hotcomicpulls@gmail.com or at comicspalooza.bsky.social over on Blue Sky. I'm going to look right now and see that we don't have any messages just waiting for us. I don't think we do.
I haven't gotten an email in a long time, but to be fair, I may be logged out of that email. So I'll look too.
Oh, just a post from Mad Capper saying that if you're not reading Children of the Round Table, that they recommend it, and shout out to us for getting them.
Oh, it is a good one. Next week, dear listener, so if you have thoughts about this, you can send it in. We'll record probably 3 days after you are listening to this, or three or four, one of the two. But I would like to talk with Cameron, because we've really been enjoying Marvel lately with all the number ones. But I want to talk about, like, is that a good thing? Is, like, ending a series right around issue 24, like the Ultimates books are doing, is that, like, ultimately good or is it bad? Like, I think there are pros and cons to what's going on. So that's going to be the B segment next week. So if you have thoughts, dear listener.
I've got thoughts.
You do?
Sure.
I shouldn't have prepped you then.
I don't know if I've got thoughts. But now it's time for the best part of the show. And I'll try to make it quick because I'm very sleepy. That is Uncle's One More Thing.
One More Thing.
And I'm up first. And I'm going to bring just a classic that I watched with my sons this weekend. And that is The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Probably one of the few Christmas movies that you have seen. I think, I'm going to say it, I think it's the best Christmas movie. And it's just really good. I'm not a huge fan of Charles Dickens, for what it's worth. But I find the Muppet take on his classic to be delightful. I think Michael Caine is excellent in it as Scrooge. And the fact that he just plays the entire thing straight the whole entire time, never winks at the camera about the fact that he is talking to, you know, like a frog Muppet.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
It's just, and he has a bunch of rats that work for him. Is just like perfect, you know. It's just the fact, and Gonzo as Charles Dickens, he is my Charles Dickens, as Gonzo the Great.
I'm just the other guy. I just think it is off of it.
Just a delight. And I think that the Christmas Carol as a story is really interesting because I think so much of like the cultural memory of a Christmas Carol is like Ebenezer Scrooge doesn't like Christmas. And it's like, maybe. But also Ebenezer Scrooge is just super greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he doesn't care about people. He cares about accumulating wealth.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't live an extravagant life, but just like for no other reason than the fact that he can. I mean, he doesn't do anything with it. He just makes the money, and like takes advantage of people and is cruel to people. And over the course of the show, using Christmas as kind of the backdrop, but he changes as a person. He's like, oh, I should care about people. I should use my material means to further enrich my fellow man. I shouldn't let Tiny Tim die from a disease that he could get a treatment for. I shouldn't underpay my workers. I should pay them fair wages and above fair wages because they work for me and I care for them. And he just like becomes a kind person as a result. And I just feel like that's an important thing to think about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you know?
And they're singing, like, a little bit.
I checked while you were talking.
Uh-huh.
It is my third favorite Christmas
movie. Oh, what's the other two?
I've been keeping
it. No, it's not Elf.
I've done 9. I've got White Christmas at 1.
Oh, that is a good one.
And The Santa Claus with Tim Allen at 2.
That's also a good one. Those are honestly, the holy trinity of Christmas movies are probably like those three.
So I guess I really liked it. My bottom three, just for anyone who's curious, is Christmas Vacation, Elf, and I abbreviated it, but the Jim Carrey How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Okay. You know, there are people that would fight you on that pretty hard. It's also funny because I'm wearing a t-shirt right now that says the jolliest bunch of teachers this side of the hallway, which is a reference to Christmas Vacation. But I've never seen Christmas Vacation. I don't particularly like Chevy Chase.
I don't think you should, man. I think you should see it as a teenager when that kind of humor like hits, because I saw it as a 32-ish year old man. 32, 33, and I was just like, why is this funny? What am I supposed to be enjoying? And
yeah, I feel like 80s humor is like you had to be there.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, well, too.
And I do feel like it is a type of humor that if you saw as a kid and felt like you were getting away with something, you would really enjoy it.
Yeah, because it's like, it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of poop jokes. The main character spends the whole time fantasizing about a girl he met at the store while he's with his family. You would just feel like you're getting away with something. And right above those are A Christmas Story and I'll Be Home for Christmas.
With Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
With Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
JTT?
JTT.
Oh, wow. Okay. Anyway, what's your one more thing?
Right. The 4, because it's the only one I haven't said and I'm just leaving it off for no reason, is Home Alone.
Oh, I do like Home Alone. Home Alone 2. Controversial take, maybe? I think Home Alone 2 is better.
I think I saw a movie with Anna Kendrick that I didn't put on this list.
Was it Noelle?
Yeah, I think that's it. and Silent Night, Deadly Night with Hopper from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, or he's Santa Claus.
Yeah, that would probably go above Home Alone, honestly. I don't know why I didn't put that on this list, but okay. Sorry, I felt like I said eight of the nine that were on my list, so I should just finish it. But yes, my one more thing is the 2020. I looked it up. Hold on. Oh, 2018. Wow. Is the 2018 Sony produced Marvel Spider-Man. The remastered that I've been playing on my Steam Deck. I've been very Spider-Man-y lately. And I think it's a weird game. What is fun about it is so fun that it's keeping me engaged. And I'm very much enjoying the story. I think putting backpacks all around town for you to find was bad. Why? No one wants to do that. Why did you do that? Some of the challenges and stuff are fine. I enjoy the base missions. Taking pictures of all of the landmarks. But I've spent a lot of time calling Final Fantasy 15 an errand simulator. And Spider-Man is so much worse than that. But yet, the traversal is so much fun that I'm okay with it. I've been enjoying the traversal a lot. I do like doing the stealth in it. I think it's fun. Predator missions were my favorite part of Arkham. And these are a little bit more free form of stealth missions. They're also a little bit easier. I'm having a good time with the stealth element of it. The combat's good. When you do it well, it makes you feel really cool. But mostly it's the story and the traversal that's really keeping me in it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of enjoy the fact that right around the end of Act 1, I'm in Act 3 now, which I believe is the last act. I haven't looked, but it just seems like there's not a whole lot more we can do from here if we don't get to a big climax. They could prove me wrong and drag it out for a lot longer. I feel as though the fact that right before Act 1 ended, I had just kind of naturally collected all of the backpacks and the landmarks. Just because like I was like, oh, I'm not done swinging yet. I'll go run over here real fast and grab this. So I feel like that is to the game's credit, even though I don't think they should have done that just to begin with, because who wants that? And then the other thing I'm really
apparently you, because you did it.
I did. But it was fairly natural to do. So I do enjoy that. And the other part I'm really enjoying is the costumes. I almost always end up in the noir costume. I don't know why. It's where I go. Just kind of naturally. I just got the 2099 costume though, so maybe that will keep my attention away from the noir costume. But I do enjoy unlocking the costumes.
Nice.
So yes, I'm having.
You have to tell me if you play the Miles Morales like sequel.
It came in a package with this one, so I.
I never played, but a little bit of Spider-Man, but I played all of Miles Morales, and I thought it was excellent.
Oh, yeah, I'm curious because people say Spider-Man 2 is a vast improvement over Spider-Man 1. So I want to play Miles, and then I want to play that. I don't know if I'll do them all. Boom, boom, boom. I'm just curious how they iterate.
Uh-huh.
I'm having fun. I have a lot of critiques.
I think
it's probably the story is pretty comic booky and it's acted pretty well. So I probably would have to give it like an 8.
All right.
From what I've played now, but cool. Yes, Spider-Man 2018.
Check it out. I think I own it. I don't own the remastered. I just own the original.
I don't know what the difference is.
It's remastered.
I don't know what that means.
Nobody does. Oh, cool. Well, we did it. We've done another episode.
We did it.
The whole thing.
whole kit and the caboodle, both together at last. So I want to thank you, dear listener, for sticking with us all this time through 45 of these things. It's hard to believe. Here we are, though.
It's hard to believe that I couldn't see.
You were always there beside me.
That I was alone with no one to hold.
But you were always right beside me.
I enjoy that you went into that with me.
Thank you. Thank you. Because you're always right beside me. Yes, and you're always right beside us, dear listener. Like Troy and Gabriella.
Like Troy and Gabriella.
You're the Gabriella to our Troy, or vice versa. I'm not picky.
I feel like Gabriella was my last, like, pure celebrity crush.
Oh, wow. That's big.
We've all
been filthy celebrity crushes ever since then.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Anyway, thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in next week where you can find us at the same turtle time and the same bat channel.
Goodbye.